Mr. Gormley, Reel 9. You mentioned to me, Mr. Gormley, that as well as uniform issue, you got harness. What exactly did that entail?
Well, a harness at the time consisted of, you had your head collar, naturally, and your saddle. That was the main two items. But then you were given a set of harness which comprised of probably, because you've got two, remember you've got two horses, so when I say it's only two, you can double that, it's like four. So you had four long traces, four short traces. These are the long traces that go through. They're all wire, all made with wire with the buckles on the end, which all had to be burnished. You were provided with a burnisher, and you had to sit and burnish these. This was what you spent half of your night doing, just burnishing up the harness. And then you had two breast collars for the two horses, which was a big band which went around the front of the horse, so he could pull. And then you had two sets of breeching, what they called breeching, which was, this was all leather work, by the way. And this breeching, which was at the back, which you used when you were going downhill or you wanted to steady it up, you would say, pull them back in the breeching, you know, the shout would come, get back in the breeching, you know, and you would pull the horses back into the breeching, which would hold the guns back, you see. And then you had your stirrups, and
The bits, the horse, the bits,
the
house?
Yes, the bits. Well, you had two sets of bits. You had what we call a snaffle bit, which you use for normal riding. Like that's it, like just riding a horse with the snaffle in. But when you were on the, with the guns, you had this big bit, like two iron bars kind of style. Well, chromium plate or whatever. And they come up the side of the door. Then had a big curb chain on the back, which kept the horse under control, because when you put the bit in, the one thing you had to make sure was that the bit went over the tongue, because if the tongue came over the top of the bit, you had no control on the horse at that. It would just go wherever it wished it to. But as long as you had that tongue underneath the bit, and a curb chain on the back, you could control the horse. That's what it was for, this big curb chain coming across underneath.
And that control was based on the amount of pain that you gave the horse pulling the reins, was it?
Yes. Well, it would be pain, you know. Mm-hmm. You just imagine a big curb chain with a human battle. You can imagine that.
And all this was issued as well as your uniform?
All this was issued to you as and when you were, and that was yours. All the time you were in that depot, and you had to clean that up. That was your, that was basic cleaning what you had to do for the horses.
And that was a nightly job, every evening?
Every night while we were in the depot. Mind you, it didn't happen like later on, but every night we were in that depot, we went cleaning harness after we'd bedded the horses and that everything down. That wasn't considered part of the working day. That was part of the working day, you know. So we had to do that every day, and that's amazing.
And
did we stop that clock? And there was also two swinging trees, which is the back, which is the means of securing the horses to the carriage. They just swung in the back. And that's where he went back into the breeching, which held the thing back. And also, every man had what they call the leg iron.
Yes, you've mentioned the leg irons. Yes, yes, we have those.
But every man had his own leg iron.
And what you said you were given two horses. Was that you alone had to look after two horses?
I looked after those two horses. Yes.
And that was your job and nobody else's?
Yes.
And of course, all.
I mean, if you were sick or anything like that, well, you were just mucked in, actually. But that was your job was to have two horses to look after, you see, and then they would.
Within your intake of men that came in, you know, with you at the same time, they wouldn't all be drivers, were they? They weren't all coming in to be drivers.
Oh, yes.
They were?
Oh, yes. As drivers, we had our own bike. You see, normally they would mix, but you mix with the gunners outside. Because you were a separate entity. You see, and.
And was all this equipment inspected regularly?
Oh, yes. There was an inspection every Saturday morning.
That included your normal...
Your bed, et cetera, et cetera. Then you'd go down to the harness room and you would stand by the thing in harness and you'd come in and inspect the whole sort of harness. And it's a hell of a lot of harness. You can imagine that with all this, the best colours and the pitching and that, they all had to be polished. Well, it was all satiscope first, then polished as well, and the traces, they all had, they were all leather lined with just the wire actually, about an inch thick, and they had, and the big silver buckles, silver buckles, right, looks like silver by the time we're finished with the bike, you know. And, I was amazing. I nearly forgot the single tree there, swung on the back end of the horse or something.
And at this point in time, you hadn't been introduced to actually working the horses with the guns behind you. This was to come later.
No, we learned to ride.
Can you take me through that then?
Well, I'll give you the first tip.
We did talk about the wooden horse in the paddock.
We did the wooden horse where. We went through various exercises, jumping over and vaulting on. That was that. Now, the day came when we were ordered to be on parade, regimental order, which was the tunic, cap, belt, putties, lanyard, everything, putties, and everything. Regimental order, we go to the riding manage. So we come down, head collars on, saddles on, only man. And then they took us, we marched off to, the order, mount, prepare to mount. So he prepared to mount, he pulled the reins in one hand, held it to the top of the pommel, okay? put in the stirrup. And when they said mount, he mounted the horse, and it sat the cut. Of course, it was quite. When you deal with a live horse instead of a wooden one, like hitting the man in the custom, they hadn't got the reins tightened properly, and that, you know, you'd be moving out from here, you're hopping on one leg trying to go. But eventually, we mastered it, and we managed to all get up at the saddle so well over there. And it was a wonderful thing when you sit on top of a horse, you know, marvellous. Then the master said, we marched forward and we went to this big riding manage, which was a big, massive place. Well, you've seen, if you watch the shows, it's in that same size as that. And we went in there and you walk round and round and round, and dismount, and you just went back and forward like that. And then once you got them under control, on trot, and it's a difficult thing to get a horse to trot, and I just want to trot him. So I said, give it a kick. So you give him a kick.
Did you have spurs on at this time?
Oh, yes, I always wore spurs. Like, on parade, that is, not there. Not on ordinary duty.
No, I mean, but in this training situation.
Yes, you had spurs on.
Did they have the sharp wheels, or what kind were they?
No, just like a
prong.
Very fine. There wasn't any sharpness about it. And then it's trot. Well, you never see. It's the most horrible feeling in the world when you're on a horse's back and you get some trot for the first time, because you can't get in to the rhythm. If you understand what I mean, the horse is going that way, and you're going, God, you're still feel the pain of his bloody back now. And you're trotting down there, he's shouting up,
up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
And eventually, it didn't take long, right? But because you got into the rhythm of it, like, and it came reasonably easy after that. And then you went to the canter and started going to a canter. Now that was like sitting in an armchair. Because you just got into a canter, you never did the gallop, not until much later. You just cant around and around there, like, oh, okay. Yeah. And we went through everything more or less that we learned in the school, on the horses.
On the wooden horse.
On the wooden horse. We went to the horse. And great, first time in a horse, it was wonderful. I've never had anything to do with it. And we did a couple of vaults in and out the saddle, which we'd already been taught to do, and the only thing was we were doing it with a live horse,
And was the horse moving when you...
Oh, yes. That's how we found it much easier. Because the horse was moving, I could do it now. One, two, three, up. And you just used to... You always jumped ahead of the horse. You jumped... You run alongside the horse, and then you jumped ahead. And as you hit the floor, he just up like that and bam, and he was straight in that side without any, just like we actually learned on the wooden horse,
So you came off the moving horse ahead of it, and by then it kind of caught you up and you were back in the saddle again.
Yes. That's
the theory of it.
Yes. Yeah. You're jumping ahead and you actually catch the horse up as he comes up. Now when you do it, and then you relearned, that was marvellous. You wouldn't believe it. I mean, we even do straight over the saddle. We went over the saddle, right over the saddle, and come back from the other side and back into the saddle.
What was the purpose of all this? What were they trying to teach you?
They're teaching just how to handle a horse. We could do every service trick that was going by the time we finished. We could ride, we had to ride with no stirrups on, no reins, and you guided the horse with your knees. From there to there.
Your thighs, your knees up to the thighs,
knees,
yeah.
You had to ride with your knees like that. But you had to be out at an angle like that.
Your feet. Huh? The lower part of your feet.
You didn't ride with your feet underneath, wrapped around the horse's belly, anything like that. You had to ride there like that, with your knees in that grip. You could feel them over there, and they're just flat, just through riding.
So the control of the horse is through the pressure of the thighs.
Pressure of the thighs, yeah. You can do it. And we did it week after week. We did it, and we used to do that. We'd go over, we'd jump over the, we'd go over the jumps, starting with the small jumps. Right, we went up as high as about 4 foot. I think that was about the maximum height I can remember jumping over. And we went over there and do these jumps. And what we'd make it, you'd be going over the jumps, you had to, and they taught you how to bend forward. As the horse came up, you went forward. And as the horse came down, you went back. And this is all enough. You're sitting there with your arms folded like this,
Across your chest.
Yeah, your arms were folded like that, across your chest like that. Just sitting with your knees. I mean, I come off a few times, and I learned a quick lesson, First time I came off, I jumped up, and without thinking, I just ran towards the horse. And as I got there, the horse, which was standing on the corner, I just turned around and let loose. We both hooves, and luckily, my reflexes were quite good at the time, naturally. I had to be, and I just went like that.
Covered your face.
And I covered my face like that. I couldn't breathe for 3 days. It pushed my jaw right back there. I was sitting on the stump. I couldn't move my jaw. didn't get up for rain, so anything like that. You had to go up for rain. And I learned it quickly. So you can never ever run up to a horse. All you've got to do, which they told me afterwards, I didn't know. Said all you should do is take your cap off, hold it in front of you, and walk up to it slowly as though you're going to feed it. And you get control of your horse again, which I did, and I only made it one less.
So you didn't wear riding helmets, you just had your cap on. Were there any serious accidents in that training situation?
Well, I can't remember, to be honest. I honestly can't remember anybody. As you say, you fall off, you get kicked, which is all normal. You get kicked in the stables, then by anywhere else, if you're not careful about what you're doing. I've been kicked many times in the stable, bang, like a.
Were these horses that you'd been put in charge of when you joined and were riding, were there an older and more mature horse than the usual ones that you would use outside?
They were just normal artillery horses. And of course, if you had a pair of wheels, which I had, which had a bridge and everything on, they were the stronger horses. They were much heavier. The two lead horses.
Were they like a Shire horse?
Not quite a Shire horse, but a medium. Like. They were what they call the wheelers. Okay? And of course, they were the ones that had control of the back. They had to get back in the britching. The others couldn't get back in the britching, so it was just a turn in front that pulled it back. They put all the strain on there. The other ones were all right while they were leading. They could follow. But it was just like somebody just hadn't something to work trained to pull it. But it's a lot harder for it to go back.
But the horse that you were training on for riding purposes,
these were the wheelers.
Whatever
horses you had when you went in,
you did all your training with those horses.
You did all your training with those horses, yeah.
The kind of commands that you gave a horse, were they laid down by the artillery, that you all gave the same commands to a horse? I'm thinking in terms of telling it to move forward. Did you say something like forward or?
Oh yes. They knew the commands better than us.
And you were taught those commands to give to the horse.
Yeah, you give them forward march, forward march, and you give them a kick and off you go. They're given the orders, right? You're managing the horse, if you understand what I mean.
How long did this training take for you to become quite adept at riding?
Well, I would say, there are 3 weeks on the wooden horses. What I'm talking about now is by the time we finished our training, we didn't do all this like in the one day, if you understand what I mean. It would have been an impossibility. You're just graduating. You did the trot and the canter. That was as far as you went for that day. And you'll probably do that for about a week or something like that. And then you would gravitate from the riding manor into a big riding place outside, which was open air, and had all different kinds of jumps and things to go through. You would jump over this and that, and you had to turn and wheel. And ride, just like you see on the ride machine, on the ride show, and then come through another fence and go over that, and a big manage all together.
And this would be on one horse. You didn't have a partner horse next to you, if I can use that expression.
Oh, yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Was that part, again, of the progression? One horse and then two horses?
You always had quite often you took two horses with you. You led one and jump with the other, and vice versa. You had to be prepared to jump with two horses.
And how would you control a second horse if you're not on its back and it's beside you? Yes, how do you control, so does this, with the reins again?
You've got reins from that view. You ride that horse, but you've got the other horse here. I mean, normally it's coupled up like, but you have a rein that comes from there to here, which if you wanted to go that way, you just took them this way. Yeah. Oh, yes, you have two reins.
So both hands would have to be doing the same thing at the same time, did they?
Necessary, yeah, except when you're going to march past, like, then you just tell the two reins in the one hand, like, then you put the whip on, and you did the present arms with the whip, you know, as you went past.
And at the same time as this was going on, you still were going through your basic arms training.
Going through your basic training that was
which we've covered, of course.
Which we've covered. And all this was all extra on top of what you had to do. And then, of course, you had a lot of sports and everything, boxing. Well, I was in the boxing team, naturally. And I was down the gym most nights, where other people were bowling up and that. I was down the gym most nights, training up for the boxing, because I knew there was a big boxing tournament coming up. And I had to represent more or less the regiment that I was in that particular regiment. And they put every regiment against each other.
It was a pretty busy day.
Oh, you didn't have time. You didn't even have time to stop and think, really.
So at night, when others were busy polishing and so forth, you would go to train with the boxing team, and presumably they were quite happy with that situation because you couldn't be cleaning your stuff at the same time.
You got excused. If you understand what I mean, they said, "Want you down the boxing? Want you down the gym?" And if they said they wanted you down the gym, you went down the gym. It was simple as that. Oh, yes, no problem. When I look back, I think I had a pretty good time. I see the depot, even though it was rough and muddy,
How long did this training take?
3 months.
From
joining up in August, I think we did. We left the depot in November of the same year. Left the depot in November of the same year. But of course, in the meantime, then you had to go on all your main parades. You did a passing out parade on your rifle and marching drill, plus your whip drill and everything. Then you had to go down and pass out in your PT and everything. That's all the road climbing and the wall bars and everything. You had to pass out that. And then you had to. Your final parade actually was they would line the whole guns up, all the gun teams.
Yes, before we come to the final parade of the gun teams, at what point did they introduce you to actually working with the limbers and the guns? Was that part of these 3 months as well?
Oh, that's all part of the 3 months, yes. You limber up.
You were taught to limber up. How was that done?
Well, the gunners did all the limbering up, if you understand what I mean. They pushed the guns into position in that. We just backed the horses on, and they secured the traces and the swinging sleeves and that to the rear. And of course, they had a big long pole going up the middle, and that's why I needed a leg anymore to protect the leg. But the gunners would do all the actual.
They would fasten things up whilst you held the horse, presumably.
We would be on the horses. We sitting on the horses, but we didn't hold them.
You sat on them.
We just sat on them, Then they would just go on to the limber because they travelled on the limber, holding handles on each side, so that the three gunners that were there.
Can you describe a limber, the actual machine itself? What was it?
Well, a limber was separated into two parts. You had the shelves in one side of the limber, and you had your cartridges in the other side. like that. We would have, well, we'll just say a limber would be about that wide.
About a metre and a half, about I guess.
Yeah, about a metre and a half. Mm. Yeah, about a metre and a half. Yeah, it would be. About a metre and a half. And then you had a row of shells inside, I think it was about, I've got a dose of that. It'd be about 40 odd shells in each shell.
And they were in rows?
All in rows, all separated in rows. About 40 odd shells in each part of this side, and 40 odd cartridge cases in the other side, you know. And, but having said that, the world limbers that just had, they had like what the shrapnel shells. Let's go to the call they didn't have a separate cartridge.
Oh, it was in with the shell, it was part of the shell.
It was all part of the shell. Because that was just a forward loading thing which was anti infantry for firing the infantry that had advanced around. Where we had the we were with the 4-5 howitzers. And they were like a high percussion shell, you know. So you needed the cartridge and the shell.
And on this, you have your part with the shells in, rows of shells, cartridges, and then where was this seat where the gunners could sit then on the limber? They're right on the top, and all this was underneath them.
They sat on the limber. As I say, the limber is a metre and a half, roughly. And three gunners sat that side. Three gunners sat that side. Three were facing forward, three facing back. Couldn't be any other way. And I think the limber would be probably about the width of the fire.
Then we were first trained at pulling the limber.
Oh, yes.
Was that
right,
initially a training?
This is all part of the training of working the forces. You see, you've got to learn how to, or you've got to learn how to take the limber and the gun and wheel it round. And you did all that. It's all part and parcel of being an artillery man.
So can you take me through the training procedure for pulling the limber and the gun? Let's say for the very first time you've been pulled back, you've got your horses all set up and reined in and so on. Now then, this is the very first time you're doing. What was the first thing they taught you?
Forward march. That was the order. As soon as they did that, you would kick them and the horses would set off.
And you would be sitting on what the lead horse?
Sitting on it, I'll be, well, normally I sit, like, later, I was a big guy. So I sat on the wheel, wheel driver seat. Now, the front of him was the centre driver, what they call the centre driver. Front of him was a man holding there. Always a man holding there, who was a leader in the group. He was the leader in the group. He ought to strike straight away, soon he became the leader of the group.
So you got your order, and then off you went.
You went, you just, it's funny, like, I mean, when you think, your limber is harnessed to the horses, then your gun is harnessed in a way to the, on a spike, right?
To the limber.
Just lies on a big spike on the back of the limber. You see, and then you have your gun, and
so you're given your order, and your very first experience was just moving forward.
Moving forward, yeah. You move forward, and you would just march, like go around the square. There'd be, even though there was other people on the square with the guns, like doing gun drill and things like that, you had to go around, and you would go around. Road marches, you know, you load everybody up and off you go.
And at what point would they introduce moving at a trot or speed? At what point did that come in the training?
Oh, well, it depends on exactly where you are, actually. I mean, if you're on a nice big plane, like Oldershot Plane, somewhere like that, I mean, you could do that quite easy. You couldn't do it very well on a hard road, something like that. But you could if you needed to, right? But we didn't do it, naturally, because we were down the horses. And it was only done if it was absolutely necessary.